Today is January 20th, 2016, and this is episode number 342 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, training video supervisor. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
That's right. If you have training videos that you need supervised, let Brian know. He is your man.
I am a supervisor.
That's great. I'm so happy you finally made it to middle management.
Yay!
Yay! Just stay away from the B arc.
From the fair enough. So, speaking of fair enough.
Yes.
Speaking of fair enough. Here we are. It's 2016.
Yes.
Apple, big giant company.
Yes.
Hugely successful.
Very much so.
Got iPhones flying off the shelves.
I know. They practically have wings.
The Mac crushed the PC industry.
Yep. Like a big old fat thing sitting on a small thing.
Yes, exactly like that. That was precisely the imagery I had in mind. Of course, those numbers actually come from IDC and Gartner. Companies not necessarily known for their accuracy when it comes to Apple-related numbers or really anybody else's numbers. Do you remember when it used to be a real thing?
Yeah. I guess we moved beyond that at some point.
Well, part of that, what is that? Part of that's because the platform wars don't really matter. Like the PC, the PC Mac platform wars are.
That ended a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah, a long time ago. It ceased having any real relevance. And of course, on the Android, iOS side, I think everybody has come to realize that market share doesn't mean everything by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. Yep, that's true. Yep.
Nonetheless, the Mac continues to grow when I think the PC had its worst Christmas in a long time. Actually trying to find those numbers.
Christmas.
What's that from?
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Seriously?
Yeah, I know. What's wrong with me?
Yeah, seriously. What is wrong with you?
I don't know. I let too many movies just slip by. That I plan on seeing. At this point, I'm going to have to buy Spectre. I haven't seen Spectre. Do you know how much I love Daniel Craig as James Bond?
Yes.
How forward I was looking to that movie?
And you still haven't seen it.
And I still haven't seen it.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah. So at this point, I'm going to have to buy it.
By the time you get around to it, you'll be able to buy a special 2-pack, Night Before Christmas and 007 Spectre.
Somehow I doubt that. Gartner said that the PC industry shrunk by 8.4%, while Mac sales increased 2.8%. IDC said that the PC industry shrank 10.6%, although they still had Apple growing at the same 2.8%. Apple hasn't actually announced numbers. And, of course, we all know that Apple's the only company that really announces actual numbers in the first place.
Right. And we'll have some numbers from Apple next week.
Next week, yeah. Apple's doing that quarterly earnings report kind of thing.
That'll be fun because it's been, a whole quarter since we've heard Tim Cook say record-breaking?
Not quite. A full quarter. Got another week to go. That'll be a full quarter.
Yeah, I know. Mostly pedantic.
Well, mostly. So the point, though, is that Apple is doing well. Apple is doing well. Yet you and I and the rest of the TMO staff and our readers and our listeners, lots of folks,
mm-hmm.
whining about little things.
Yeah, things that you would expect a company like Apple. Apple paying close attention to details, sweating the small stuff. Why are they letting things just kind of slip by?
Yeah, that is the question. So why is Apple letting the small stuff slip by? And the thing that got us going down this path today was a line item. It was a line item in Logic 10.2.1.
Yeah, in the updater notes. What was that line?
That line was, a collection of 30 plugins have been redesigned to add Retina support and improve usability.
So, just to make sure I'm not missing something here, OS X El Capitan has been out for months.
Well, Retina MacBooks have been out for years.
And Retina MacBooks have been out for years.
Retina iMacs have been out for a year and a half.
And they just updated some of the plugins in Logic for Retina support, which means that a lot of other plugins still do not have Retina support.
By definition, it does. I can only assume that's what Apple actually meant. So Apple didn't specify which plugins are included in Logic.
I bet you'll be able to figure it out.
Probably actually. That's,
when you have a nice one and a crappy one side by side.
Right, that'll take some hunting and pecking at the very least. I'm launching Logic right now.
I'll be interested in seeing if it actually works for you.
Because Apple doesn't specify which 30 plugins it is, for one thing. But
right.
So that's annoying. It's also annoying that the line item isn't that all Apple plugins have been redesigned to add Retina support. Or those few plugins remaining that didn't have Retina support have now been updated. Do. Yeah. Right?
Right. But no, the line item was 30 plugins have been updated. So that tells me there's a lot of plugins that Apple still hasn't updated.
Yeah. Why are they giving me the GarageBand interface?
You have a GarageBand interface in Logic?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. See, I already fixed this once. See, this is annoying. It's like little things, man. Little things.
Yeah, and
little things. Got to go to the advanced preferences and turn on.
And turn on real interface.
Show advanced tools. Actually, that still doesn't do all of it. I don't know. I need to go before I say too much more on that. But then there was the fact that not all plugins worked. Well, of course, you know, I shouldn't even say that though, because it's actually possible. I was kind of dealing with a legacy installation.
Right, but you experienced a problem with audio units.
Yes, even after after El Capitan was updated to fix that. And that was the 10.11.1 version of El Capitan.
Now, but see, still that feels to me like something that fell through the cracks, because something as critical as
yeah, audio Logic units. Should have worked for El Capitan the day that it came out. Everything in Logic should have worked in El Capitan the day El Capitan shipped.
And did not. Audio units were broken.
Yeah, and third parties were having a lot of problems with getting audio units verified by Logic. And I mean, that's just something that Apple should have had ready to go out the gate when El Cap was released. Logic is one of Apple's flagship software products.
And it was broken.
It was broken. What didn't work entirely. Wasn't entirely broken. Some of it worked.
Yes. Well, it was partly broken, much like you're mostly pedantic.
Yes. And then we were fiddling around today with devices, there's a difference between devices that are allowed to download iTunes content and Macs that are authorized to play content.
Right. So that's a little confusing.
Yeah, and unnecessarily confusing, in my opinion.
I agree.
Right. And we noticed that so in the list of devices that are allowed to automatically download content.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Which I understand why they're separate controls, but why are there separate lists? Those should all be kind of be combined. Anyway, removing some of those items is grayed out. So there's a list of things that you can, a list of devices that are authorized to download content downloaded from the Mac. So in other words, you go to iTunes or the App Store on a Mac and you browse and you download an app. Some of your devices can be authorized to automatically download those things.
Right. Right.
And then some of them, won't be. And you want that sort of device level control, but it shouldn't be a separate list from,
And there also shouldn't be this ambiguity in the list where you have the remove button grayed out for some devices but not others. And no right. explanation why.
Oh, it's not – okay. So even there, it's not automatically downloaded. It's actually can download. Right? So you have a separate list of devices that can download So these computers and devices are associated with your Apple ID for automatic downloads or to download previously purchased music, Apple's apps, and books. Computers and devices can be associated with a different Apple ID once every 90 days. Days remaining indicates the number of days before you can associate that specific computer or device with a different Apple ID.
Now, that makes sense because they have to appease the content creators.
And yes, unfortunately. Yeah. We can't blame that one on Apple. As a matter of fact, Apple has done more for us in terms of being able to manage our content in a way that works for us than all of the other companies, in my opinion.
I have to agree with you.
Yeah, Apple gets kudos for that. But I've got three devices that are listed here, and there's a remove button, but they're all grayed out. I had a fourth device, which I no longer own, which I was able to remove. I don't know, that just seems sloppy to me. It seems sloppy. We've got, aspects of iOS and LCAP both where just some of the fine touches don't quite seem to be where they need to be.
It feels like in many cases they got the pieces for a model, stuck them together, but then stopped short of sanding the edges so everything fits smoothly.
Now, it's real easy to say that this is just because Steve Jobs is gone.
I don't think that's it at all.
I don't think it is either. I think
we were seeing some of this sloppiness happen before he was gone.
Less of it.
Yeah.
And usually for things that seemed like they no longer had Steve's attention. Right.
Right. But we were already seeing sloppiness in big places like major interface elements that worked one way in some apps and a different way in other apps, like closing a window in GarageBand and System Preferences. That quits the app. That doesn't close a window.
Right.
Yeah. So this sloppiness has been cropping up a lot for many years.
Fair enough, but it's increased.
Yeah. I don't know if it's increased because there is less attention being paid or simply because things build up over time.
I suspect that it's Apple's executive team being spread too thin.
You know, I think you just hit on a key element right there. Apple still tries to run like a startup, and it hasn't been for a very long time.
Well, I'm not going to criticize that. I think that underlying philosophy is a good one. The underlying philosophy that Steve Jobs has is that you should always run lean, and you should never have too many people, and that when you have small teams doing stuff, they're more nimble, they can make better decisions, and things move faster.
There's a difference between running lean and running anemic.
Yes, there is, and we may be approaching that anemic status. Especially at the executive leadership level. In other words, the senior VP and those VPs who who are ultimately responsible for stuff. I mean, like, so we just saw Phil Schiller. Phil Schiller has been in charge of marketing for years and years and years.
Yes.
Many, many, many years. Well, now he's also in charge of the app stores and the iTunes store, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the iTunes store or just the app store? It's the app store and the Mac app store. Is that right? Or is it just a Mac app store?
It's all the app stores. Men.
It's all the app stores, top. Not iTunes. Eddie Q still has iTunes in, right?
Yes, he does.
Okay. Well, can Phil Schiller head those projects? Probably. But what is that? How does that affect his efforts with marketing? It's not like he had extra time.
It's an odd mix to put together.
Jeff Williams, COO. Actually, he's not CEO. He's a vice president of operations. I think he's now a senior vice president of operations, right? He's been Tim Cook's right-hand man on operations for a very long time. He's actually Tim Cook has always gotten this, you know, enormous amount of credit for how awesome Apple's operations are. Mm-hmm. Jeff Williams has been part of that process for a very, very long time, right? But Jeff Williams was put in charge of the Apple Watch.
Right. And it just occurred to me, I think you're a little bit behind on current events for Apple, because Jeff is COO.
That's recent, isn't it?
Yes.
Did you look at a thingy thing?
I wrote an article about it a couple weeks ago.
Look at that. Chief Operating Officer. Good for him.
You should send him a card.
That is actually relative to the reason. It was towards the end of last year. But before that, he was at the vice president, senior vice president level. Yes. And now he's COO. But again, does anyone listening think that Jeff Williams was sort of sitting around with twiddling his thumbs with not enough to do? Well, you know, he helped bring
Apple Watch. I'm sure there's some middle manager somewhere that thought that, but they were probably wrong.
Maybe.
But the point is, he has new responsibility. He has more responsibility.
Eddie Q, how much does Eddie Q? Of course, Eddie Q actually has theoretically a little bit less on this plate because he got rid of the app stores that got put on
Phil Schiller's plate. Phil. Yeah,
but you know, that man, goodness gracious, he has had a lot on this plate. That guy's a superhero.
Yes, yes, you know, he is.
Dealing with Hollywood, dealing with the book industry, dealing with the ridiculous lawsuit from the DOJ, dealing with the music industry, you know, and until recently, dealing with the app stores.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, goodness, wow. All these people have a lot on their plate, and Apple is expanding. Well, those plates, that means that their plates expand. And when their plates expand, there's going to be some crumbs that get swept off onto the floor or something. How do you like that for a extended metaphor?
I love how you extended and drug that metaphor right out like a boss.
So Jonathan Ive, he's got that chief design officer title now. Of course, that actually meant that a couple of guys got stepped up, right? And that's good. I mean, so you know, it's not like Apple isn't expanding its executive ranks, but it seems like as big as Apple's ambitions are as the world's most valuable company, that Apple should maybe be expanding those ranks a little bit faster. Of course, you know, it's hard to keep everybody being only A team members when you're expanding. I don't know. It's a difficult.
Spit it out. Try singing it.
I think that Tim Cook has a really hard job.
There you go. See, wasn't that just so easy?
It's so easy. Wasn't good.
Well, that's always a matter of perspective.
But I mean, yeah, it's a tough job. Yeah. And like going back to Steve Jobs, all right, we all know that Steve had this penchant for those fine details that everybody else missed. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, it's gone. Steve's not with us anymore.
Yeah. I think a lot of that was gone even when Steve was with us.
I don't think that was. Here's what I think. What I think was that when Steve was with us, Apple was still expanding. he still had that magical gift for that, you know, that you know, 1% of a product that no one else would notice, that was part of why we consider Apple devices so magical.
Mm-hmm.
But even Steve didn't have time to apply that ability to everything Apple was doing.
Okay, yes, I will accept that. That is true. I think that he also did not have the inclination to do that. He would focus on whatever it was that currently caught his fancy.
Well, I think that Steve probably would have done it for everything if he could have, but he can't. So the only things that he focused on were the things that interested him.
Yes.
Mostly pedantic, but I mean, in this case, those pedantic semantics matter.
Right. And we're on the same path here. I agree with you. That's what I was trying to say, just in my more average guy friendly sort of way.
Right.
Anyhow, so stuff is falling through the cracks, and it's kind of frustrating.
It is. Minor things are falling through the cracks, mind you. It's not like Apple is falling apart. We're not saying that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We're not saying that. But you know, seeing this list of things in Logic, and seeing this list of a collection of 30 plugins that have been updated for Retina support. I mean, I can't believe there were any plugins in Logic that weren't already redesigned with Retina support. That's just weird. Why?
Yeah, it was a very surprising line to see.
I mean, yeah, to me, everything in Logic should have had Retina support, including all of Apple's plugins. The day a MacBook Pro with Retina was released, Retina display, years ago.
Right. Yeah, that's what makes this the most shocking to me, is that we have years worth of Retina computers and still non-Retina capable apps coming out from Apple.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just... oh, it's strange. And all in all, this update of Logic looks pretty cool. The new Music Memos app that was released today, Wednesday.
Yeah, that sounds kind of neat.
Wednesday, January 20th, if you're listening at a later date. Right, the Music Memos app is really cool. The new Live Loop stuff, I haven't played with that, but you did in GarageBand?
I played with the Live Loops in GarageBand on my iPad Pro, and it was a lot of fun.
That's good. That's good. And Music Memo seems really useful. You know, I have 30 or 40 voice memos that I've recorded where, you know, like I'm sitting in my car, I pulled over, you know, I've gotten to a parking lot and I've had some idea for a song.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll start humming the idea, you know, I'll sing the parts that I've come up with, sometimes drumming with my hands. And I'll describe the sounds that I'm hearing in my head, you know, like, you know, it's going to be a fuzzy guitar, a journey mm-hmm. guitar, or a clean guitar, actually almost everything that I've been writing for a while has got some kind of fuzzy guitar, but whatever. And, you know, I'll describe the drum sound, because usually I'm you know, I was a drummer before I was a guitarist, so I'll usually have some kind of drum line in mind for a song, and I'll like, you know, sing and hum and tap these things into my iPhone and voice memos with the idea of coming back to it later. And
a lot of people apparently have been doing that.
Yeah, it seems like it. So I'm all excited about music memos. So and what music memos allows you to do is to do what I was just saying, except for it will give you auto-generated bass kind of accompaniment and or drum accompaniment. It shows you the notes and chords that are being played automatically, auto-detected. Mm-hmm. It'll auto-detect the tempo that you're doing. And you can so they're using the live drummer stuff, the auto generated live drummer stuff that's in Logic and GarageBand.
Right.
So you can actually fiddle with the drum lines that are being auto-generated live, right there in the app. And then you can, if you have an iTunes, no, what, Apple Music Connect account, i.e. if you're an artist who has gone through the Apple Music Connect process, you could then share directly to your Connect account, or you can dump these files off to Logic and GarageBand for further playing.
That's really cool. So what you can do now is pretty much like hum a song into your iPhone and have that converted into something you can use as instruments in GarageBand or Logic.
I think one of the things that Apple actually had in mind, what the app had in mind, the app designer had in mind, was the ability to not just hum, but play parts. So someone, you know, can have their bass or the guitar or their horn or their, you know, woodwind or their cello or their piano, and they can actually play, and it'll capture, you know, it's not just humming and stuff. But I don't think that the stuff that's going to be recorded would seldom be anything. Well, no, I guess if you had some sort of, if you're doing an interface so that you're going directly into your iPhone with your instrument,
which is totally doable.
Yeah. Yeah. You could do it that way. But I would imagine that for the vast majority of musicians, this would become a reference recording, not a usable recording.
But something that's much easier to work with as a reference recording compared to what you were having to do yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely.
With voice memos.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's actually now like is like a workflow and not just wait a minute, you know, I've got my, and that's how it started for me. You know, I've always come up with song snippets and ideas for songs and melodies and guitar lines and drum lines. You know, I've done this all my life, but it was probably a few years into owning my iPhone when I realized that, hey, wait a minute, I could just sort of like record this real quick, and that way I won't forget it.
Right, and what I'm guessing is that there's some professional musician that Apple is chummy with that said, hey, you know, I'm having to use the Voice Memo app to do this. Can't you find a way to make it easier? And then some high-level person at Apple was like, huh, yeah. And they ran with it, and here we go.
Yep. Could be, or it actually could be something – anyway, whatever. We don't know. We don't know how it came about. But I like it.
Yeah. I like it too. I think it's great. And I'm loving, even though I've only had a few minutes to play around, but I'm loving just noodling around with live loops in GarageBand. And knowing that once I get a little more comfortable with how everything works, I can record songs all done with live loops right in GarageBand and then share them if I want.
Right. It's a good thing.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's a good thing. So we're not down on Apple. We're just a little bit cranky because we feel like some things are slipping through the cracks. Yeah. Not everything. Some things.
Apple is better than this, and so it's frustrating when
Apple has been better than this. It's actually possible that Apple is not better than this. How's that for a scary thought? But Apple has been.
I have to go get a drink.
You know, it's possible that a bigger Apple simply means that
you won't get written up plugins for years.
Yeah, and that we just don't have that maniacal level of detail on it as much as we're used to. Because I mean, there is still a lot of maniacal level of detail. It's just not. It's not as broad as we once expected.
Yeah. Well, I think we still expect. We're just not getting.
Yes. Fair enough. I will accept that.
If not,
that
we wouldn't have been ranting and wailing and gnashing teeth today.
It's true. It's true. And I pulled out some hair, too.
I didn't. But definitely wailing and gnashing teeth. I was just kind of worried because you know, what if I pull it out and it doesn't come back?
What if you what?
What if I pull my hair out and it doesn't come back? I don't want that to happen.
That's a good point. We are getting older.
Oh, yeah. Well, great. That's two sad things you've told me in the span of 3 minutes. I really
You're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome. All right. CCL.
What's that mean?
It's the, oh, goodness gracious, now I can't remember exactly what it stands for. Oh, good Lord. Top men.
Well, then what's it mean?
Top men. This is, I want the exact names. Congressional Cybersecurity League Labs. That's it.
I kind of like it better as League, and I'm picturing these guys in lab coats and the little electric arcs running up the wires.
Yep.
Anyhow, carry on.
So basically, we have the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars is developing something they're calling the Congressional Cybersecurity Lab, the CCL. Can we just call it that for the rest of this podcast?
Yeah.
CCL?
Yeah, let's call it CCL. I love their albums. No, wait, that's CCR. You're wishing I went and got that drink.
Maybe it would have been for the best. William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, a philanthropic group.
Yes.
That was established in the name of William and Flora Hewlett of Hewlett Packard fame. The William and Flora Hewlett, matter of fact, I would imagine that the vast majority of people who have ever heard of the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation have done so on PBS.
And NPR. Done
so through, and NPR both, yeah. Because they both greatly support public TV and public radio. I'm sorry, they both the foundation does. Right. So
they don't
because they're dead. Yes, they issued a grant for $400,000 to the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars for developing the CCL.
Okay,
so that's how we know about it. And the point of the CCL is bluntly to educate Congress on cybersecurity fundamentals.
They're going to need more money.
Yeah, probably they will need a lot more money, to be honest. I mean, this is just a grant from, you know, one foundation so it's not like the work is done. But I mean, in other words, so where this relates to Apple, of course, is the sometime call from some politicians for Apple to bake in back doors into the encryption we use for our communications and our iOS devices and our Macs.
Right. So is it possible that the CCL will be able to get politicians to understand that a backdoor for one is a backdoor for all?
It is possible, but it's not a sure thing. Even if they develop a fantastic lab and a fantastic, you know, portfolio information presentation, right? And, you know, even if they do everything right, you'd still have to have politicians willing to learn.
And to be fair, I'm not saying this in a mean way, capable of learning. Because there are some things that some people just simply will never be able to wrap their head around.
It's true. Now, it seems like the CCL is specifically wanting to address even that. Right? So the core of the lab is a 6-week seminar series that introduces participants to foundational topics in cybersecurity, how networks work, and what defends them, end quote. For instance, do you remember the fellow who was letting us know that about the dump trucks and the tubes? as if he was revealing something to the rest of the Congress.
Right? Yeah. Good times.
Good times, right? Anyway, so going back to quoting, how networks work and what defends them, key bad actors and their tools, the roles of different sectors in preventing or responding to threats. Each seminar will be led by top technologists and scholars drawn from the private sector and nonprofit sectors. Each week's seminar also includes a tabletop exercise in which participants are divided into groups and given scenarios to role play that emphasize the role of the legislative branch as well as a social component. Unless otherwise noted, sessions are held at the Wilson Center. So that sounds great.
Yes, it does.
And it sounds like they would specifically be trying to bridge that gap to folks who just don't know a darn thing about how all this stuff works. But they'd still have to have even there. So I guess my point is I'm a little less worried about their ability to get information over to those who may seem incapable of learning. Mm-hmm. I'm a little less concerned about that simply because, you know, this is one of the things that the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars does, right, is educate politicians. I'd be a lot more concerned about politicians taking the time to avail themselves of this.
Yeah, it's a 6-week course, and I'm sure it's not
it's probably one course a week.
Yeah.
But I mean that's a huge time commitment for a politician these days.
Oh,
it's a huge time commitment. And, you know, I'm really excited by this because I hope my belief is that we can get past the point where politicians and law enforcement people are asking for backdoors. I think we can get past that point. Just like we did in the 90s, I think we can do it again.
I hope so. Because if not, then there will be those of us that understand and will find ways to make sure that what we do stays encrypted. But most people will just simply be out in the cold and will have no idea that any bad guy with the right technical skills can get at their data.
Yeah, backdoor open to anyone is open to all. Open to everyone, we'll say it that way.
Yes.
It's open to anyone, it's open to everyone. And I'm assuming we can get to that point again and that Congress and there was the chucklehead in the New York State Assembly, Mr. Tetone.
Oh, right. Yeah, pushing for New York-specific backdoor into our mobile devices.
Yes. You know, I'm assuming we can get past this, and something like the CCL could really help. But it's no guarantee, and it's by far from a guarantee. There's nothing that would make any politician have to go to this.
Right, that's right. It's a total voluntary thing.
Yes.
So I could see a politician that's being pressured to go sending some intern and calling that good enough.
Maybe. I don't know if that would be allowed when it's specifically aimed at politicians. So, I mean, quite frankly, I'd be okay if they were sending staffers. You know, as long as someone on their staff actually understands this stuff, that should lessen the incidence of buffoonery.
Yeah, we can hope.
Buffoonery as relates to cybersecurity.
Right, right.
There's plenty of other.
Yeah, there's plenty of other opportunities for political buffoonery.
Yes, absolutely. And there always will be. And, you know, keep in mind that even once one politician learns the ins and outs, you know, he's got to survive the next election for that knowledge to still be part of the process.
Right. And he has to, or she has to go up against a bunch of other politicians that have not chosen to educate themselves and have their own political agendas that may very well be completely independent of what's best for our cyber security and privacy.
Yeah. And let's just imagine a situation where something horrible happens. A terrorist attack. There's murders. There's a kidnapping, a high-profile kidnapping of some sort. And we learn it actually – and let's just make it a fact that encryption on their iPhones or Android devices played a role. Okay. In not being able to thwart it ahead of time. Let's just make that a fact for the sake of my hypothetical situation.
Okay.
At that point, especially if it was a major terrorist attack, especially if there was a major loss of life, plenty of politicians could ride a call for government access to our communications to power. They could ride to power. What am I trying to say? Ride on the coattails of such a call in order to get to power. So, you know, it doesn't matter if the people who are in office at that point know that the back doors are just going to make all of us more vulnerable to lots of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
They would be able to leverage that to get to power. Whether or not they do, it's just, I mean, this is super complicated. We're always going to have to be vigilant.
Yes.
And write your congressman. If you're congressman, write your congressman and let them know how important it is to you that, our mobile devices have modern encryption without backdoors, because you understand that a backdoor open to someone is open to everyone. Yes. Let them know. Let them know that it's important to you.
The more people contacting their representatives, their senators, are going to make a – I really need to try that sentence again. The more people that are contacting their political representatives, the better, because we need to have lots of voices being heard.
Yes.
That sentence shouldn't have been nearly as hard for me as it was.
That's okay. I will counter with, did you know that there's a newish version of D&D?
I remember hearing something about this like last fall. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, actually, I think some of it was even released earlier than that. I think some of it might have actually been released in 2014, but it's new to me, 5th edition D&D. I'm super excited by it.
Yeah, I heard that there's some really cool changes to the instructions.
Instructions? You didn't play D&D, did you?
I did a little in high school. It's been a long time.
Turn your geek credentials on. Anyway, a friend of mine played the 5th edition D&D this weekend for the first time. He said it was like welcoming an old friend who had improved with age.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. The 4th edition, I think, was a lot of miss. With a few hits, and the 5th edition, everything I've learned, it's pretty exciting. I want to play. I want to play some 5th edition D&D.
That's awesome. All right.
Well, I want to. I didn't say I'm going to.
I think you should.
Time and opportunity.
I think that if you put out the call to just that general area around you, you would find enough people that would be excited to play with you. You'd be able to put together an awesome game.
Or join someone else's awesome game.
That too.
Right.
All right. So
if ACM at MacObserver.com or TM O'Brien on Twitter. It's Brian with a Y.
Let Brian know so he can play D&D with you.
Yep. 5th edition. 5th edition. I'm interested. I am interested. So in the meanwhile... Uh-huh. In the meanwhile, so we got back from CES, a week and a half ago?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And one of the things we saw, actually, what specifically sparked this in my mind was the smart vents that I linked to in the Cool Stuff Found.
Right. I'm Key. Really curious about those smart vents.
So, you know, it's basically they're connected vents. They connect through the Keen smart hub. Smart Bridge, I think they call it.
Right.
And allows you to better control temperatures on a room by room basis, either through an app or through a Nest Nest thermostat.
Right. So it's monitoring like the air temperature in the room.
Yes. So, you know, you can have those vents open and closed on a room by room basis. And this seems like a brilliant idea. I'm sure we'll have a lot of smart vents on the market sooner rather than later. And we saw lots of connected stuff, right?
We saw a lot of connected stuff. Yes. That was a really big thing this year. And the connected stuff that we saw last year, it was like this hodgepodge where companies were just creating weird products and saying, and it's connected to your home. And this year it felt like it was more refined, developed, where companies were presenting all of these connected devices for smart homes that served more of a purpose. They didn't feel like gimmicks in the way they did last year.
And yet. I do not get the impression that connected devices are being built with security in mind first and foremost.
That is a concern that I'm having too.
Now, like, I mean, I wouldn't personally put internet connected door locks anywhere.
I wouldn't do that without doing a lot of research to learn about what sort of security protections are there. Now, I have internet connected light bulbs and light switches in my place, and I feel pretty safe with those. Like, I don't think someone's going to figure out how to hack my lights and start turning them on in the middle of the night. And that's because I already knew how to set up a secure network, and the smart bridges for those devices are all on the inside of my network.
Right. Right. It's not going to be like much of a problem, even if someone does.
If someone figures out how to hack into the Hue lights that I have in my place and starts doing light shows in the middle of the night, I'm going to be really pissed off, but I'm also just going to go flip the light switches off.
Right. Right. I could see someone using, like, imagine someone committing a murder.
Mm-hmm.
And then having hacked into their connected lights, obfuscating the murder for a period of time by
turning lights on and off at different times. Yeah. So it appears that someone's around. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Hack into their whole connected home and unlock the doors remotely so they don't have to break in.
Or alternately, they want to break in and they hack in and they keep all the lights off because so that they're the only ones who will have lights.
And then shut off all the motion sensors. Sure.
Shut off all the motion sensors. Yeah. You know, or, you know, goodness, this is definitely probably, you know, sci-fi thriller territory, but, with the smart vent, say a smart vent could actually form a seal.
Oh, and hacking, then you suck the air out. And suffocate someone,
or I was actually thinking introducing some sort of a gaseous poison.
Oh yes, that's a classic trick in TV shows and movies.
Yeah, you know, it's I'm not saying that there is a problem, and I'm not saying that these companies are being negligent. By any means, I'm not saying that. I am saying that we're in early days, and I don't have the feeling that security is first and foremost. Just like the internet, you know, just like the Mac, just like Windows, right? You know, these products weren't really developed with security in mind, and we had more than a decade in which this was a huge problem as companies and you know, internet providers and equipment makers all had to like re-engineer their stuff with better security in mind. Of course, you know, security is still an issue.
Yes, of course. It'll always be an issue. One thing that I am liking for HomeKit products is that Apple is forcing a high level of security onto device makers who want to support HomeKit.
Well, that would be freaking fantastic if Apple would actually, like, you know, release some HomeKit stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. HomeKit is just what did Steve Jobs use as his term for Blu-ray? A bucket of hurt.
It does seem like a bucket of hurt.
Yeah. I had to go and buy a third-party app called Home. It's $15 just to get HomeKit to be usable for me. Because I was using devices from multiple manufacturers, which is part of what HomeKit is for.
Yeah, HomeKit's supposed to bridge that, supposed to be, you know, a unifying platform for other manufacturers to tie into.
Right, but it's up to the manufacturers to support products that are coming from competitors, and most of them aren't. So you have to turn to third-party apps to bring everything together. A notable exception is Eve. Their app, which is free, you can download and just use with whatever HomeKit stuff you have, even if you don't have any Eve products, which is really cool that they did that.
Right.
But it's not as feature rich as the Home app is. But even still, I finally got everything set up, and I went through a couple weeks where I would trigger stuff for HomeKit and the wrong lights would come on, or a light wouldn't come on, or they'd be the wrong brightness or the wrong color.
And even when companies have the best intentions, and even when companies are thinking about security, right? And like I said, I don't have any specific reason to think anyone's doing this wrong yet. I guess I think where I am with it is that the connected home stuff has not been subjected to anywhere near enough real world use and testing to truly be secure. And at some point, someone is going to figure out something that they can do with this, and they're going to try to hack these systems, be it for fun mm-hmm. or profit.
Probably both.
I mean, it's, you know, like the car, the car that where someone could someone in some tests that they were doing, someone was able to hack into a car through a Wi-Fi connection
mm-hmm.
and apply the brakes.
Yes.
While the car was on the road?
Yep. They were able to put the car in neutral. They had control over the throttle. Yeah.
I mean, that of course was that a shipping car?
Yes, it was a Jeep. I can't remember which model, but it was a Jeep.
Yeah, I mean,
the difference there is that car manufacturers had absolutely no interest in security for the computer systems that they're putting into their vehicles.
I don't think you could say no interest. Surely it's more like experience and knowledge and awareness and
mindset. I think they really had no interest. It was just not something that they felt they needed to approach at all. But people or companies that are making devices for smart homes, at least they have a modicum of knowledge telling them that, hey, you know, maybe security is something we should be looking at.
Yeah, but, you know, when you're a small company and a lot of these connected home device product companies are still small, mm-hmm. you have limited resources.
That's true.
And I am not against automated home. I think this stuff is great. Eventually this is what's going to lead us into walking in and be able to say something along the lines of, turn the lights on, enter, come. My terrible Patrick. This is the worst Patrick Stewart impressions ever. But,
I have to agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. This is how we're going to get to being able to control our homes with our voice. This yes. is how we're going to get there. This is part of that process, right? Controlling a lot of this stuff from our iPhones is great. But what we all really want to be able to do is have the lights all turn on and off, actually have a lot of stuff sensed for us, right? You know, for the home to understand which lights I want on and which lights I don't want on. And then when they're not getting it exactly right, we're able to control specific things. You know, I mean, to get to that, we have to go through this phase where stuff starts getting connected and stuff starts talking to bridges and products start talking to each other, and we can control all this stuff from our smartphones, right? We have to go through this stage, but we're still so early in this. There are going to be problems. There will be problems.
Yes. And I'm okay being one of the people that is trying to work through the problems.
Oh yeah, so that's why we have jobs.
Yeah, and yes, it is a lot of fun. It's also really frustrating. Like to this day, I'm getting an error in my scene that I have set up for when I tell my place that it's bedtime. And I can't figure out why I get an error, because everything that I want to happen does.
Huh.
But I still get an error on my iPhone.
Yeah, hard to know if it's something in your setup or a problem with their code.
Yeah, I have no idea. And it's so fickle talking to Siri to make things happen. You have to have the right words in the right order. So it's not really natural spoken language control yet, and it's really not reliable. I mean, we are still very much in the early bleeding edge days of all of this.
Lights I want bright.
Yes, that's kind of how it works.
Yeah. So and it's just going to be interesting. You know, it's like that. It's like the Qrad from. Quantum Top Men.
Yeah, I'm waiting to hear what all this is.
The device, the thing that I was going on about, the Qrad from Carnot Computing. The Qrad, right? The distributed processing.
Oh right, right. Okay,
computer, yes. Right, and it's a
that's
heater
built
right?
into the heater. Yes. Okay, yes. I'm totally with you now.
I mean, right? They say it's secure, and I actually assume them. They know what they're talking about. But the very first thing I thought about was so this is the device that it's a computer that's built into a radiator,
like a heater radiator that would be in your home,
right. And you stick it on your wall, and it's going to heat your room for you. And the heat is coming from work being done by the computer, and that work is being sold to you know, banks and
yeah. So you're heating your home with distributed computing.
Yes. Right. I just love this idea. I just love this idea. I'm so excited about this idea. This makes so like to me eventually like. All, like the vast majority of home heating should be done through all our connected devices. Well, man, or maybe that's not practical. Well, whatever.
Depending on who you are, that's probably exactly what's happening.
okay, but purposely. Nonetheless, I love this idea, but the very first thing I thought about was bank robbers gaining access to you know, some bank's computer system or security system. Mm-hmm. by having an attack right along on the snippets of work being done.
That would be really clever. And it's a great story device.
It's probably not possible. Right. I mean, for one thing, the work is actually being handled is being sent out from Carnot's, not being sent out from the banks. But whatever. It's just the very first thing that leapt to my mind was like a bank robber using this sort of thing to hack their way into a bank, either to, you know, shut down alarms or to steal money electronically or whatever. And we're just so early in all these connected devices. I love this. These ideas and these concepts, I love where we're headed for it, but there are going to be problems of some sort at some point. Same thing with autonomous vehicles. There's going to be a problem at some point.
Yep, there will. You know, it's very frustrating for me at times, but I'm loving where this is going, and I see so much potential in all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so much potential, so much. We're living in sci-fi times.
We totally are. Yeah. But at the same time, it's kind of frustrating because there's a lot of it that just doesn't work right or work reliably.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And speaking of time, we're out of it.
We are totally out of it. So I know what to do next. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
You know, I got a plug-in for my Twitter account.
You did. I'll do one for mine. I'm Jay Gamut on Twitter. You should totally follow me.
And we have a Twitter account for the Apple Context Machine. That's at Apple. Now, what is it? At Context Machine.
At Context Machine. At Context Machine.
At Context Machine. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. You can actually reach out to us through the At Context Machine Twitter account. You can yell at us or... You know,
or tell Brian where your D&D game is going to be.
You could also do that at TM O'Brien. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. I think I said that, but whatever. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. Thanks, Cashfly.
Thanks,
Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us, and that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. I want to use my D&D dice.